They'll check it out. A whole new generation of young people today who belong nowhere.
But I prefer to be an outcast.
Third culture kids, where the concept of the Dukan is the corner shop or the top shop.
We are live outside. Hey, yo, what's up, people?
What up, nation?
It's a revolution of expression.
You're tuned in to the Dukan Show. Stay tuned in.
Arab digital generation is shaping our identity, their creative expression, and their future. So please give a very warm welcome.
The Dukan.
Welcome to your tribe.
So Reem has been pushing to bring us together, and this had to happen ASAP.
Akka is so
before
busy,
this trip.
And this is really important.
And it's that big of a story
this
had to happen this way.
Okay. So this is the best story of 2021 so far. I'm putting this down for the award because I think it's the best story of 2021.
Why are you standing up? Sit down.
I'm standing up because it's exciting.
Oh, okay. She's standing up.
I thought she was sitting down. I'm sitting. Listen. Look. Okay. Akawi, this happened. It started 8 years ago and it culminated yesterday. Marmar, tell Akawi what happened to you 8 years ago.
8 years ago.
But the story
the day was
so
what?
More like the year was.
Exactly.
The
no,
year
we
was.
Need to keep this within a reasonable time frame. So I've been told I have a specific time limit to hit this to. So here we go. No, but start ago. At least, you know, is it was a summer.
It was.
I mean, granted, it was in Dubai.
I know how
it
to tell a story.
I mean, I know it was in Dubai and hot, but like what part of 8 years ago was it?
8 years ago, I had, this is 2012 in Dubai. Just started directing. I had just started getting into directing from when I was doing editing and post-production. I moved into directing. I was with Reem and she was helping me to put my shit together and to promote myself. And I'd had like a small amount of work, nothing like crazy, but you know, I was getting there. I was on the right, you know, kind of the up and up, all right? And so I had a website and the website was, you know, Reem had set it up. So obviously it was like top of the list when you look at Google.
Amar.ae so, you know, for anyone who wants to look at this website.
Wait, I thought we were telling a story. This was not a promo.
Sorry.
Thank you, Reem.
I'm excited for our successes.
So someone reached out to me. All right. This was, I think, around May of 2012. This woman reached out to me and called me.
Oh, called. Okay.
She called me.
Do we have a name?
This woman called me. She said her name was Priscilla. And
she
said that she was calling Priscilla. Actually, she said that Priscilla, but her nickname is Scylla. I don't know why. Whatever. This comes into play later on. I know. So Scylla, yes. So she called me and she said, hi, is this Omar? I said, yes, this is Omar. She said, I wanted to get in touch with you on behalf of our production company, I Am Wonders. That's the name of the company, I Am Wonders, with an S. We are running this season's upcoming Survivor reality show, Survivor Asia. So I
oh
said,
my God,
okay.
I remember that show. It was hot
Asia.
Back then. Yeah, they
hot,
stopped by Dubai
hot.
Back then. I remember that.
Absolutely. And so as part of Survivor Asia, she was looking to have different locations around Asia and the Middle East. And I had been selected as the director that they were interested in working with in the region, in the Middle East. And that, you know, they had looked me up and that they wanted me to interview with their showrunner, whose name was Nick. They wanted me to interview with Nick, but the catch was that I needed to go and do the interview in Indonesia.
But
and that
you
I
haven't
to
night.
Go.
But wait, hold on. But you haven't directed a show.
No, he's not directed
no.
a show.
No, I'll get to that. So I haven't directed a show. I directed some corporates and some commercials, you know, nothing like huge at the time. I'd had a lot more experience in post-production at that point than directing. But be that as it may, man, if someone, you know, gives you an opportunity and says, hey, you know, here's something.
Grab it by the balls.
Know, I was like, grab it by the balls. So I was like, okay, interesting. And obviously all these questions were going on in my mind. She said, you need to talk to our showrunner, Nick, in Indonesia. But we need you to get there right away because this show it's happening and all the pieces are in place. And, you know, we're just looking for you. We want to interview you and we want to see that there's chemistry and that there's a good connection between you and Nick so that you guys would be working well together. So I said, okay, thank you very much. Let me get back to you. I spoke to Reem and we had a chat and it was like, well, listen, what's
okay,
going
wait,
on
wait,
here?
Wait,
like,
sorry, before you jump into the conversation, what's a showrunner?
Oh, a showrunner?
Okay, so a showrunner. Do you want to take it away, Reem?
Yeah, so a showrunner is basically responsible for constructing the story of the show.
Okay.
So they're the person that would like in the world of Survivor, they make the storyline, they build the storyline, and they would hire the director to bring that vision to life.
Okay, like, so they're the OG of the project.
Of the creative.
Okay.
Yeah, of the creative. And they'll have a team, depending on the episodes or depending on the structure of the show, that will direct the different segments, but they are the glue that holds everything together. And they're usually a writer as well. But in a reality TV show, yeah, they're like the top creative, I guess you could put it that way. So I spoke to him and I said, this is really odd. But you know what? I mean, what the hell do I have to lose? You know, go to Indonesia, go meet this guy, you know, like, whatever, they'll pay for the ticket. So then I reached out to them and said, okay, great. You know, I'm willing to go.
What was odd about it? Like, it sounds like a job opportunity so far.
Because the odd thing about it was that I had no reality TV experience. Obviously,
there was no reality TV shot in the region.
So your showreel doesn't show that much credibility, and they just happen to find you.
The job offer at all. But hey, I mean, stranger things have happened. I mean, they might have just been like looking for a director in the region. They thought, okay, this guy's got enough directing experience that he could handle something like this. I was very green. You have to remember, I had just started directing. I was looking for opportunities. I was in a position where I was willing to kind of jump at an opportunity and say, hey, you know, why not? And plus, don't forget, I mean, there's an ego thing as well. Like if someone reaches out to you and says, hey, do you want to direct this project? Even though you wouldn't expect them to, you would think to yourself, yeah, okay, I'm great. Sure, I can have this. Let me do it. Yeah, why not? You know, survive.
Did you have a man bun back then as well?
No, he had a mohawk.
I had shaved. Did I have a mohawk?
He had a mohawk.
Or a shaved head?
He had a mohawk.
By the way, FYI, the picture for this episode is Omar in a mohawk. We're going back old school to the camera. We're going to use someone's picture.
Yes, for sure.
I got one for you. I got the perfect one for you too.
So
I reached out to her. I said, okay, I'm willing to come. Transfer me the ticket and I'll go. They said, and Priscilla said, oh, actually, I can't transfer you the ticket. You need to buy it yourself and then we'll reimburse you. I said, why don't you just transfer me the money and I'll buy it. She said, oh, we can't. There's just no time. The best thing is for you just to buy it. And then we'll reimburse you. Now, she had sent me an itinerary, a document, like a template of their kind of NDA. I signed an NDA. There was a whole bunch of documents that were related to the show. It seemed legitimate. Again, I took another risk and I said to myself, screw it. What's the worst that can happen? I went and I bought a ticket at Danata. And that night, I was off to Indonesia. So I flew to Indonesia.
I just stop you 1 second? Sorry. So since you were in Green, what did she think of all of this?
She was understandably hesitant because she didn't want me to put myself in any dangerous position. But you know, all of us, man, what's the thing that distinguishes us from other people? We show up. You know, we're there. We will be there. You know, we're not going to be the ones who stand aside while somebody else takes the opportunity. That's
also
part of my mantra.
There was no other job on the table. Like this was the only sales lead we had, guys. It's not like today where there's like multiple options to choose from on any given week.
Right.
At that time, Omar had just started and we had like, he had the attitude like he always, like we all do. If you start something and you're hungry, you're going to show up at the table, even when it's strange, right? Yeah.
And if we remember correctly, as per Reem's previous talks at various events, we had -1,500 in our bank.
We had -1,500 dirhams in that account. Like, we had made some money by then. Okay. But like,
I made some money by then, but I didn't have an ongoing job. So I had the chance to do it. And I thought it was adventurous and exciting. And it was, at the very least, an interesting story. And I'd never been to Indonesia. So all of that lined up. And I thought, I'm a big boy. I can look after myself if anything happens.
With a mohawk.
So I jumped on the plane. And then I landed in Jakarta. And this is when things started to be a bit weird. Because I landed in Jakarta and I sent an email. This is before WhatsApp, of course. I sent an email to Priscilla. And I said, hey, I just want to let you know I'm in Jakarta. I'm on my way to Yogyakarta. Because I had to take a transfer to Yogyakarta where I was going to meet the driver. I'll be there soon. And she wrote me back almost immediately, upset that I hadn't been reachable. She said that she was trying to reach me on my phone. I said, well, that's a bit strange because I'm on a plane. So obviously you can't reach me on my phone. But I kind of brushed that aside, that it was just some oddity. You know, people can be weird. I got onto the plane to Yogyakarta, landed in Yogyakarta, and I saw this driver. The driver had a sign. The sign said my name. I met the driver, got into the car, and he was about to take me to the hotel room. On the way to the hotel room, I speak to Nick, the guy that I'm supposed to meet the next day. And Nick says, okay, so listen, you're on your way to the hotel room, but can you give some money to the driver? Because he needs some cash to cover your some expenses for your hotel and for the driving, but we will reimburse you. So at that point, I was like, no, I'm not going to give any money to the driver. You guys brought me here. You give money to the driver. So this went back and forth for a good like hour of them basically saying, no, please just withdraw some money, give it to the driver, then get to the... So at that point, I was getting a little bit like, why are you asking me for money? This is not right. But finally, at about like 1 a.m, I was kind of sick of the argumentation and I withdrew something like $300 from a bank machine, gave it to the driver. I said, whatever. If it's gone, it's gone. Otherwise, I'll see you tomorrow. So I got home. I got to the hotel room.
Yeah, Akawi.
Yeah, Akawi.
From left field.
Blow some holes in this.
Question. So, and this is more towards you, not the scammers. So, if you had to withdraw money to give the driver and you had the option of selecting how much money, why did you give him $300 in Indonesia? Why didn't you just withdraw $100? And why were you like, why didn't you go like, okay, if I lose it, I lose $50. Or if I lose it, I lose $100.
They'd specifically asked for more than that. And I don't remember the amount that they had asked for. And I said, I'm not willing to do that. And the money converted into Indonesian money was like a round number. Like it was an amount that you could withdraw from the bank machine. And it just happened to be around $300
something. And what was the breakdown of what they wanted to do?
Akawi wants to see your receipts.
They didn't. It was a very broad and generalized breakdown. There was no receipt that had been handed to me.
No, but like when they said we want the driver to like buy stuff for you or like to buy things, did they say
it was something
things?
About
these are
food,
critical questions.
Yeah. Transportation and it was really for the transportation more than anything. It was like for transportation. And by the way, just bear in mind, I wasn't paying for my hotel room either. Uh-huh. And so
not
I
yet.
Didn't pay for my hotel room.
Didn't get there yet.
Not yet.
No. But by the way, this is what I love. This is Abu Dhabi streetwise versus
Akawi's
Toronto
asking critical questions. I'm here for
listen,
them.
Akawi,
I didn't ask these questions.
Akawi's
if I
great
asked
at this.
All these
I'm
questions, I wouldn't have gone on this adventure. So I did get an adventure out of it. So bear with me. So the driver was just a kind of a middle-aged, or not middle-aged, but like 35 to 40-year-old Indonesian looking guy. I didn't really interact with him too much.
That
he dropped me off
mistake.
At the hotel. Mm. So there were many mistakes, but
sorry, third
this
mistake
was
by then. Yeah,
third mistake. Exactly. I get into the hotel room, a small, kind of like a hotel. It was felt kind of, nice place, clean, but like more kind of like a smaller rooms and stuff like that.
Fish
but it was fine. It was clean. It was comfortable. What?
Fish at Taffy.
Indonesia's Muslim. They should have.
Makan fish
so oh, Makan. Oh, you're on the non-Muslim side of town.
That's another red flag.
Already
that's,
sus.
That's definitely
sus.
Red flag. I called Reem. I was talking to Reem. And there was a knock on the door. So there was a knock on the door. And I went to the door. Mm. And there was nobody there. Mm. There was nobody there. It was clear knock.
There we go.
So I felt a little bit... It was like a... That kind of thing, you know? So I felt a little bit put off because I was like, okay, why is there nobody there? I told Reem and we both agreed that this was a bit freaky. I'm going to change rooms. I'm just going to change rooms. So I went down to the guy and I said, look, my room is a bit small. I want to change my rooms. He was like, sure, no problem. I paid a small amount for an upgrade.
What's
changed
the small
my
way to, because we're calculating.
It was nothing. It
What's
was nothing. It was nothing. It was like... It was like $50 or something. It was
$50
nothing.
It was
$50.
Yeah,
that's small.
Like that. Yeah, are you adding? Share, you have a calculator? Okay.
Does Akawi's calculating?
This guy comes with his mohawk and throwing cash
yeah,
for
a calculating. Look, okay. So I upgraded, and the room was bigger, and I felt more comfortable and safe. You know, because I was like, this whole time I was thinking, am I a drug mule? Are they going to put some drugs in my suitcase? Are they going to try to take my money? Like, what's happening? I want to keep myself
Where did
protected.
That thought creep in from?
It's the Canadian,
from the
like,
beginning.
Beyond,
it was from,
like, they teach you not to, like, be in these situations because you might be
yeah.
muled.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you might, they might.
Yeah, they'll hide it in your mohawk. Like, okay.
Maybe someone, it wasn't a long mohawk. I was like, maybe somebody's going to walk, you know, try to get into my room, put some, hide something in my suitcase. I was alert, you know, very alert. Mm. Anyway,
clearly.
Next morning, I get up. The driver's there to pick me up. Good sign. I go with the driver to the restaurant.
Same driver?
To a nearby restaurant near the airport, because everything was kind of closed, to meet Nick. So I've got my bag. My bag has the laptop in it. I put the bag in the back of the van, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go meet Nick. The car is kind of parked next to the restaurant, and as I'm walking towards this guy that I see sitting at a table, and the guy's maybe same age as me, pretty much, a little bit chubby, kind of short hair, little spiky short hair, Indian looking guy. Seems like kind of from an Indian heritage, well-dressed, smart-looking, confident-looking. I look over my shoulder and I see the car driving away. So I get a bit upset and I'm like, wait, where's it going? And this guy, Nick, recognizes that I felt uncomfortable. He said, don't worry. He's just going around the corner to park. Your stuff is safe.
Your bag was in the car?
It was in the back of the car. Yeah.
The moment Omar said I had a laptop in my bag, I felt at Cowie's spidey senses. They weren't tingling, they were on fire.
You have to remember, why would they bring me all the way to Indonesia to steal an old
why
fucking
laptop?
Why
would you go to any country in the world leave your laptop in the car, in a cab? I get that.
It was an oversight. But by the way, that laptop had already been drowned in soda water. Once.
Look, let's not, so, that's another story. Like, I so want to really exactly stay on track like with the story.
Sorry,
on
okay,
track.
Yeah, please, Omar, continue.
So just as an aside, when I had first spoken to Priscilla, she told me that the director's name was Nick, that the showrunner's name was Nick. I happened to have worked like a week before with an assistant director called Nikhil, an Indian guy called Nikhil. So I wasn't thinking clearly, but I thought, you know, Nick from Indonesia, for some reason I figured his name was Nikhil as well. So when I was talking to Priscilla, I said, yeah, you know, I can't wait to meet up with Nikhil. And she just kind of balked for a second. She's like, how did you know his name was Nikhil? So I said, I don't know. You know, I guessed that it was Nikhil because, you know, Asian, Nick. She's like, oh, okay. It was very odd. It was another one of those odd things. Anyway, so cut to the next day. I'm sitting in front of Nick in this restaurant. And I start talking to him. The guy is confident. He's well-spoken. He's charming. He's charismatic. He's well-dressed. Everything about him
exudes
a sense of…
Shani, you were attracted to him? I don't understand.
Did he have an accent? Did he have colored eyes?
He didn't seem to be a pawn. He seemed to be someone who knew what he was saying, right? And we were talking and he was exuding a sense of like, okay, I'm, you know, this is the show. This is what's happening. I'm looking for a director. Are you the guy? Are you able to do this? Are you able to do that? Meanwhile, I'm like, great. Sure. Yes. I'm hungry. Let's order some food. So we order some like delicious nasi goreng. You know, we get some Indonesian food. I'm enjoying myself at this point. He's confirmed that my bag is safe. I'm sitting with the guy right in front of him. I can like, you know, see him right in front of me. Everything's fine. I'm like, cool, this seems legit. I'm eating. We talk for like an hour. You know, tells me about the show. And, you know, we basically shake hands at the end and with a good kind of feeling like this is going well. And I'm like, yeah, cool. I've got this in the bag. This guy's sold and it looks like… you know, if this is actually legitimate, then I've got this job. So he says, okay, great to meet you. You know, I've got some other meetings to do, but, you know, you've got the driver for the rest of your stay. You know, please go with him wherever you like and do whatever you need. You've got the hotel room till tomorrow. So, you know, good luck. So I spent the next day and a half
Who paid the bill for the lunch?
He did.
Oh. He did. That guy was okay now.
All right. He did.
Like, well, you're $300.
They paid for the hotel room and the transportation. So, you know, that
you
$300, I guess.
You
know. Fine. But you know what? It's within
the
that
hotel
scope,
room and the lunch.
You know? Fine. Within that scope. But wait and see. All right. Yeah. I go to the mountains. I take pictures of like nature and I frolic with the deer. There were deer. There were like
frolic with the deer
in the mountains with these tourists. And I climbed up on these rocks. It was wonderful. I took lots of pictures.
So pretty much being a Canadian in Indonesia.
Yeah. Exactly. I was like, I suntanned. I bought some fabrics for Reem, you know. And then I went back home. You know, I got on the plane. I got back home. Now, I sent an email to Priscilla right before I left saying, hey, I just had the meeting with Nick and it all went really great. And she responded to me and she said, actually, I am not happy. I heard that you told Nick that you changed your rooms because it was too small. Obviously, this is why everyone in the UAE is backwards and nothing is progressing. And you guys don't know what you're doing. And I'm like, whoa. And she's like, and it's not Pris, it's Scylla. She insisted because I called her Pris. See, my aunt's name is Priscilla. I call her Pris. So in the email, I called her Pris. She got upset. So it was weird. It was this weird, weird like explosion of anger. And then I wrote to her back and I said, hey, you know, it must be a miscommunication. I really enjoyed the trip. I connected to Nick. The room was a bit small, but it was nothing. I wasn't upset. Then she responded to me and she said, we are all professionals. And I do see that you had a good meeting with Nick. So we will be in touch and good luck. I was like, okay. Fine. Weird. I landed back in Dubai, told Reem the story and I reached out to them again. And she had told me that she was actually going to be in Dubai in a couple of days and that we could meet. So I was planning on meeting with Priscilla, Scylla, as she likes to be called. We arranged for a time to meet in Mall of the Emirates. I go to meet her there. She's late. She doesn't show up. An hour later, I send her another email. I try to reach out.
Is she late or she didn't show up? Which one is it?
She didn't show up. Her phone's off. Nick's phone's off. All the emails are off. Their website is down. Everything is gone. Not a trace of anybody related to I Am Wonders. Nothing related to Priscilla. Nothing related to Nikhil.
The website that had everything the production gone. Company was gone. Like everything was gone.
And so meanwhile, obviously I had been chasing for the reimbursement for the money that I'd spent naively.
I can't be stressed
obviously
out.
That was gone, right? So everything's gone, gone, gone. But I figured to myself, look, what did I get out of this? I got a trip to Indonesia. I had a new experience. I've got a story to tell. I bought some fabrics that I gave to Reem. I got some pictures. I put them on Instagram. I had fun. I had a good time. Hey, you know, chalk it up to a lesson learned and an experience in my belt. This was 8 years ago.
Cut. Can you send us those pictures to promote this episode?
They're on like his Instagram. Okay, they're the first pictures on his
pictures
Instagram.
Pictures are on my Instagram. They're like maybe the fourth and fifth big set of pictures on my Instagram. It's
Anyways.
Me like frolicking in
We get it. You love Jakarta. We get it.
We get it. You frolicked with the deers and with the animals.
Yogyakarta.
And you did something.
So this was always a mystery. This was always like, what was that about? They didn't get anything out of me. Like, it's not worth it for them to get like a couple of hundred bucks. Like, who gives a shit? You know, like, sorry. Who gives a... You know,
it's okay. Welcome to the
Khan
show.
Okay, fine. It was done. Then cut to yesterday. Reem, take over.
I'm hanging out on Twitter where I always am, and this girl called Buy Now Blog Later. She posts like a podcast because she shares a lot of we share podcasts, and this. I'm going to forward this to you now, Akkawi, but I'm going to read it because listen to this podcast.
This
okay?
is a synopsis.
This is, yeah, I found this yesterday.
Okay, breakdown, name, synopsis.
The name of the show, one second, I'm going to send it so that Akkawi can see it at the same time. The name of the show is called Chameleon, Hollywood Con Queen. And this is the synopsis. For the past 6 years, someone or some group has been terrorizing a certain class of Hollywood workers. Strivers, day players, and physical trainers and makeup artists and security guards. They receive a phone call or email offering a job of a lifetime, a key role on a major film or TV show. The offer comes from a powerful woman, one of the biggest producers or studio executives in the industry. All these strivers have to do is get on a plane for Jakarta immediately. But when they land, there is no... Thanks, Marmar. But when they land, there is no producer, there is no movie, it's all a fraud. And this is the incredible true story of one of the longest and strangest cons in history. Tag along as two longtime journalists untangle the story of the Hollywood con queen scam and embark on an obsessive quest to figure out who's behind it. So we start listening to this podcast, right? Because it has so many of them. It's 10 episodes. They're not that long. We start listening to this podcast and Akkawi, almost every single thing that happened to Omar happened to these people, except it seems like whoever was doing this is now like so advanced that they got tens of thousands of dollars from these people and everything down to the knock on the door in at night. And no, but I think for some of these people, no one showed up. Like Mar actually met this
person. There was a major difference was that I met this guy that called himself Nick, okay? In person, face to face. According to the podcast, 99% of all the people that got scammed never met anyone physically. All right. There was one person later on in the podcast that says that they bet him, right? Without spoiling the podcast. Okay.
I think we can spoil the podcast, guys. Like, I don't know.
I'm okay with it because there's a lot to be said here.
Should we?
No, because there's a lot to be said here. Because
I think we just need to say it.
I remember I was coming over and I was coming over and Reem messages me. And it's funny, like as I parked, I'm getting like 10 messages from Reem back to back. Where are you? When are you going to get here? We got to talk. This is crazy. This happened to Omar and I. We got to discuss this right now. Like it's just back to back messages.
So, okay.
This happened to me in 2012, right? So it happened to me in 2012. The first story that they got on the podcast is 2014 in Hollywood. So when it picks up in Hollywood, this person… okay, has basically honed their grift in order to basically mimic a different high-powered Hollywood producer women specifically in order to try to rope these unsuspecting kind of small-time kind of actors and trainers and makeup artists.
People who want to become famous who want to make it in the industry.
And get them to go to Indonesia… to meet with this driver, same driver every time, and then give the driver some money, usually $1,000, $2,000. Some people gave him $6,000 over the course of a couple of weeks, you know? And then he would drive them around and drive them around. They would do recces, location recces of different locations, and just nothing. They wouldn't meet anyone. They wouldn't meet with a producer or director, no one. They'd just be with the driver the whole time. With me, I met the guy on the first day. Right? And in the story, in the podcast, there's one other guy who met this person, you know, who was getting scammed. He was a screenwriter. And it was right near the end of this sordid tale. And he went to Jakarta six times.
Went to Jakarta six figures. Times.
They spent like up,
including
yeah, some,
his
some
legal
six
fees,
figures.
He spent,
yeah. He spent like $80,000.
He spent $80,000.
Crazy.
Including right. the legal fees. So
that's not what Omar did.
That's not what I did.
You spent $300.
They tried it on me and they ended up paying out of pocket for me.
Let me explain what you did.
Yes, please.
The Mohawk is what
you
did.
You got Nick fired. Ask him why.
No, go. Tell Akawi.
Why, Akawi?
Because you're the first person to get scammed. And then they realize that people are idiots and they don't need to actually need someone. They're just going to give the driver money.
Right.
So
right.
Like, why do we need Nick? Why should we split the pot with Nick? Let's fire Nick and just keep the driver.
Yeah. Wait,
it gets better. It gets so much better.
But it's not actually the case. Because as the story progresses, we find out.
There's more.
So let me
take it from here because by then I got to their place and I heard the story of Omar's experience and I'm like, okay, great. Let's listen to this podcast. And as we go through the podcast, me being my impatient self, I decide to Google the story and all I Googled was Hollywood people get conned in Jakarta. And I found tons and tons and tons of articles instantly and images and videos. And as I went through it, I figured out some stuff that I decided not to share and I closed my laptop and I told him like, okay, we're just going to listen to this because I figured it out, obviously, because the story is out there, but I didn't want to ruin it for Reem and Omar.
So it turns out, Mar, you say it.
There was a major twist and the major twist is that the women or the single woman that had been mimicking all these other female producers' voices while doing
the scam. Who spoke to you?
Who talked to me. As Priscilla, or Scylla, as she insisted on being called, was not a woman. It was actually Nick.
Jaw drop moment.
It was actually Nick.
Was Nick the driver?
No. Nick was the guy that paid for lunch.
Nick was
for Omar.
The dude who paid for lunch.
And
he's
okay.
the man behind this. Now, what we weren't sure if that was the case, because up till the 9th episode, it was like, or 8th episode, they didn't know who this guy was. But then there was one mention of people saying that they believe that this guy is of Indian descent. And I was like, it's got to be him. And so they figured out who it was. And Nick's actual name is Gobind. And he's been at this for 10 years.
And we have a producer named Gobind.
Yes.
And we have a producer named Gobind.
What's but crazy about Nick, this is that… Yeah, go ahead, Mar.
Nick was… mimicking. Nick was mimicking women's voices in order to make these phone calls and then
convincing
these people to do what he wanted them to do. So he was a true like sociopath when it came to this. Like he was manipulative, sociopathic, overconfident, but really desperate for some kind of affection and some kind of validation because he was getting some of these people, not me, I feel really left out, to have like
you scenes, feel left out?
Scenes with him of a sexual nature on the phone.
He looked at more. Yeah. So unfortunately, he seemed to get more brave. And then eventually it kind of went into the area where he would audition actors and make the have them do sex scenes with him on the phone, which is sexual
male
assault.
Actors, mind
that's
you.
That's violation. That's violating.
Yeah. And it was at the height of the Weinstein cases.
Yeah.
The Me Too movement. It was all over the news. So it was at that same time.
Yeah. And so this guy clearly started with Mar and then it just escalated because according to the podcast, the earliest person they have is 2014. But no, he has the receipts. We have like…
Oh, we have receipts?
2012.
Mar left in 2012. We have the treatment for Survivor that they've made. Like,
so did you get in touch with them?
No, we found the podcast yesterday morning and we binged the whole thing. And now we're telling you and we're like, okay, what do we do with this information? Because the guy was actually arrested in November.
Manchester.
He was the arrested. FBI got involved. It was massive.
He was arrested like, 2 months ago.
He was arrested like 2 months ago.
Maybe now you can reimburse the $350.
Imagine. He's like, he goes on inmate pen pals and he's like, hello.
You're only $300.
But they were saying, so the big thing that they were talking about in the podcast was how this man, unfortunately, he came out to his family as being gay and his family completely…
Whoa, this is his story. This is what
he said.
But he is not a trustworthy narrator. We don't know if anything he says is true.
Okay, fine.
That.
Let's go with that.
But if that's the case, then he must have seen Mar on somewhere, tried to like lure Mar in.
Yeah.
And turns out Mar was cheap and wouldn't give him the money that he wanted. And he was like, you know, I don't need to be this
but
guy.
But also, let's be honest, like a Mohawk does not scream sugar daddy either.
No, it doesn't. No, it does not. But I just feel like, first of all, I'm really glad that nothing happened.
Let's clarify.
I know we're laughing because we're trying to make light of a really strange situation.
I didn't have a Mohawk.
Situation.
No, just to clarify, I did not have a Mohawk at the time. That was post-Mohawk era.
Now the story is gone.
Sure.
Just to let you know.
That was boring. Nobody cares.
But I did have some luscious locks. I had a shoulder length hair. I looked quite fetching. I was in my younger days, you know.
No one asked.
You know,
I was literally no one.
I was fetching in
none
my
of our
days.
Listeners
but
care
the point
about
is
no
that. Asked. I think what happened was that it was a test run. Look, in 2012, they were probably trying out this new scam that they wanted to try out. The fact that I actually traveled from Dubai to Indonesia was a huge win for them. It meant that they could get people to go there. I was 99%, if not the first, one of the first, right? Because
but you're
there's
saying
no
them,
recorded
like,
earlier.
Are you saying them?
Now,
like
I want to say them because it's him and the driver.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So the driver was in on it, right? And the driver
so basically you were
R&D. That he had met in jail.
Yeah.
Right? So the driver was found out to be like his mentor, basically. Someone that he'd met in jail. And they were in on it together. But Nick or Gobind, as you know, that's his actual name, ended up… he was really the mastermind. And he was someone who really needed this kind of deep emotional validation because he was missing something in his life.
Which you gave
life.
Him
was,
none of. That's why
well,
you were
I didn't
told.
Give him any because… Yeah, and he was like, okay, go back home. Fine. You know?
So
like,
it was more of an intimate… Stayed. It was more of an intimate intimacy scam than it was a financial scam.
Oh, you make him sound like a rapist, not a con man.
But he kind of was, because he took advantage of people and got something emotional and, you know, in some extent sexual out of them, even though it wasn't without any touching.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but just out of curiosity, and please, like, feel free to be as honest and as candid as you want, or just say no comment if you don't want to talk about this. But this is very serious. During lunch, did he reach out under the table by any chance?
Show me on this doll.
Did that happen?
Well, it wasn't doll. It was nasi goreng, and it was very good.
No, like,
did he touch your hair?
Look, Kawi, what do you make of all of this? Because honestly, how do you put a story like this together? Like,
yeah, Omar, you were the first. Like, you were. They're like, we need to start with someone, and Omar.ee is probably the easiest thing to Google.
Yes, and that was it. They got
like,
me.
You know what? Let's start. Then they're like, we need to do our demographic for where we want to count. They're like, okay, Canadian Palestinians won't give us 1,000; they give us 300.
Okay, no more of them.
Smart.
No more of them.
No more of them.
Let's go look for more desperate people in the United States of America.
Proof of concept.
Exactly. So according to the podcast, they thought there was a scam that he did in Jakarta, okay, with this woman when he was in jail. When Govind was in jail, he got in an argument with his boyfriend. He got upset at his boyfriend, and his boyfriend was working at the U.S. embassy. So he called in a bomb threat to the U.S. embassy from jail.
Yeah.
This became a very serious incident.
Pretty careless as a person, damn, to be honest. Like, very callous.
Yeah.
So the cops came. The cops came, and they basically, you know, extended his sentence. And so from jail then, he called another woman who was like a promoter or producer. And he got her to come to jail with a talent, like a singer or a dancer or something, to put on a show. And he organized this from jail. And then he basically took advantage of this woman a little bit in Jakarta before, according to the show, he immediately went off to Hollywood. But now we know that he didn't. He did a stop in Dubai first.
Omar, I have a question. Omar, I have a question.
Yes.
Do you feel responsible
for all
the people in the States that lost their money? Because the reason he continued with it is because it worked on you. If it didn't work on you, he would have went like, you know what? This is not a great con. Or, you know, maybe we're like, you know what? Maybe I don't want to be a con man because I'm bad at it. But since he made $350, he's like, you know what? This could be a thing.
Listen, you're not taking… No, I'm sorry. You have to be fair. Take into account the expenditures that they spent on me for food, transportation, and the hotel. I'm sorry, man.
But you paid for that. $100.
Fact that you made it to Jakarta is…
Yeah, miracle.
He's like, all right, you know what? Okay, they'll come here. Now, since they're already here, how much money can I take from them? And bro, it's Indonesia. I make it sound. He took you to Zuma, Indonesia.
I stand in solidarity with all the victims of Govind. And I don't know what his real name is. His name is Govind.
But I'm sure somewhere in the science of crime or like the psychology of crime is that the first victim is the one that opens the doors to, oh, this can work. I want to become a
soldier. I am the floodgate. I am the floodgate. And I do feel responsible for proving his system. I think you hit the nail on the head there. Everyone has to take responsibility for themselves, starting and ending really with Govind himself, who's now being held in custody in the UK, awaiting deportation to the States to stand for his crimes against all of these different
people. So my second question is, are you going to file something to go like, you know what, even though it was $300, there's a lot of emotional stress on me, I would like $30,000 and make some
this
money.
This has plagued him for years. This has been troubling him for so many years.
I don't think that the guy has $30,000 to his name. But what I am going to do is
I'm
going to
reach out. How
do you know? He's a scammer. When did you see his bank account?
Well, you might be right. You might be right. But, you know… Ultimately, this isn't about money for me. I think it's about giving these people more info to show to them that this scam, the international scam of bringing people to Jakarta, goes back at least to 2012, which means that there were a lot more people than they even think that had actually fallen
that
protests.
Have nothing to do with the United States, because the only place that they managed to put a case forward is the United States.
Was in the United States. But, so these are international victims as well. I don't know how many people he got in Dubai itself. I don't know how many people he got in other parts of the world. You know, they were focused on Hollywood, because that's where all of the majority of his victims are. You have to remember, Hollywood is full of people who are just trying to make it. A lot of people who are on the low rungs, who are desperate to really just have an opportunity and will bite at it. You know, they will take that bait. You know, there aren't as many in Dubai, for example. You know, there's just me.
Another interesting fact about this guy. He's a food influencer.
He had a vlog
in the UK.
But I couldn't find it.
Yeah, but we need to dig that out.
I was really creeped out yesterday, and I lost some sleep over it because it did make me uncomfortable. This idea of somebody pretending to be a completely different person and then manipulating Mar.
It's absurd.
It was a bit concerning. Like, not bit. I was troubled by it, that somebody would manipulate to that extent was troubling.
Yeah, you couldn't sleep.
It is creepy.
Well, because but also I got into my head about it. So Mar went, as soon as Mar found out that it was the guy, he slept like a baby. Like, he went to bed, he passed out. It was
the one mystery. The one mystery in my life that I really will never, I didn't expect to ever find out anything about. I thought it was a total like one off, you know. This mystery has been solved. And not only solved, but it was turned into a 10 episode podcast with full storytelling and different characters telling me the backstory of the backstory. I mean, it was really an amazing day. I think we should get Omar on that podcast.
Yeah, this is what I'm trying to say.
We should reach out to them.
Is that what we should do?
Yeah, I think we should reach out to them.
Okay.
Yeah, because also keep in mind, the other time that something like this opportunity, you know, came across our table, we actually made money in Thailand.
That's okay. Right.
Right.
All right. So, like,
at least by then you had a team, you had defenses.
Well,
you know?
I just feel like, you know, it's just one of those really strange things that happened 8 years ago. And then suddenly when I saw that tweet come up, I was like, no, it can't be.
How did you feel when you saw the tweet?
Something in me.
Oh my God.
I was like, I swore out loud. Something in me went strange. It was like strange. Like, you know, when
I was giddy.
You know, when the air changes around you, the air was like tingling around me. And I sent it to him, and he was upstairs in the bathroom, and you could hear him from the bathroom. No way. You could hear him from the bathroom. And I just feel like it's a remarkable thing. I'm so grateful that Mar wasn't hurt or injured, because he was put in a space where it was very malicious. And when you hear what the women went through, the girls were put in a car and driven around for hours. Like, it was really bad. You could tell that he was getting progressively braver and more dangerous as the years went by. Obviously, we wouldn't know that if these wonderful journalists had not come together and decided to put this puzzle together. We literally were sitting on this story for years. We never told you guys. We never thought anything of it. We just thought it was strange, and we never said anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was like a really well put together story. It was one of those investigative podcasts, you know. So it was a very well put together story, and it really even delved into his background as in college, where he went to different colleges and universities on their debate and forensics teams, which was basically like speech teams. So he excelled at talking and learning how to convince people to say and do things and mimic other people. So this was his skill set. So,
he was
obviously a very troubled and sick individual who got off on manipulating and hurting people without any care for them. But, you know, he was obviously skilled at what he did, you know, ultimately.
No, for real. You should definitely check out the podcast, Akawi.
Yeah, I mean, like, Akawi's so busy at the moment, but like, if you have the time, check out the podcast.
Yeah, when you drive, listen to it.
We've given you the summary of it.
And for the listeners, what I'll do is I'll link the podcast in the show notes.
I know the start and the ending.
And the part they didn't know too,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was just so strange. And I was like, we have to just get, like, I have to tell the story.
So let's reach out to them. Let's reach out to them and see what happens.
Do you know what I mean? Omar Abbas, Omar.ae for all your adventures, I guess.
Because
I just don't know.
Omar.ae, is that still on?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still on.
And it is. No, you just updated your website, like from your past shoots.
No, but like, I just want to, okay. And this is something, I guess, obviously, if it feels strange, it probably is. Like that's, this whole thing was so odd, but as a woman, I feel it would be a different experience. But
follow
for Mark,
your gut.
For you guys can lean into it. You guys can go and like, yeah.
We feel less, I mean, I felt less of a physical danger, you know?
Yeah.
I felt less like, because I mean, I just felt like, okay, I can handle myself. You know, maybe it was a bit cocky, you know, like maybe overly so, but I did lean into it. And obviously if there were like, if they really had some nefarious intent and burst into the room with a bunch of people and weapons, like I would have been in a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah, but it's time, also understandable. You're like, happen. What? You're like 6'1". You're
but the other guys he took advantage of were military guys.
Yeah, yeah.
They were some, military guys, exactly, personal yeah. trainers. But I think they were not the
same,
small
but
guys.
But in the same way, Omar yeah,
the same mentality.
A bit comfortable. They had the same mentality, mm-hmm. right? Like a gym trainer that trains celebrities, right? Or like the security guys who are ex-Navy SEALs and whatnot. Like, they felt the same comfort Omar would have felt, like,
which
I could take,
like,
care,
I can
of myself.
Take care of myself.
I could be anywhere and I'm okay,
yeah.
right? And I think they never were worried about physical harm. But just like Omar, something in the back of their head told them, this is a little off, whatever it is. Something's off, yeah. but you still go through with it because, like, yo, jackpot, there's an opportunity at this that I want to, as we said at the beginning, if you show up, you'll get the deal.
You'll get the adventure. Exactly. At right? least you may not get the deal. Yeah.
In this case, no deal. An adventure, a mohawk, and photos frolicking with deers somewhere in Indonesia.
Up and traveling to show up. That's
yeah.
No, for real.
No, not there is quite a big jump of saying, look, I'm going to get on the plane. This is true. But at the same time, it was a calculated decision in the sense that I was willing to let that money go if it didn't work out.
Mashallah.
It was a calculated decision in that sense. Because it was a good opportunity. You know, to try, okay, it was worth it.
We were younger.
This is the disadvantage of having a Canadian passport.
It was a moonshot.
Yeah.
Yo, imagine true. Applying for a visa, waiting for your visa to come
up. We'll be there like 14 days, 15 days.
Yeah, wait for your visa. Yo, if it was like Kelly and I, let me walk you through the process.
I was lucky enough to be able… No. Obviously, I think I must have put on my credit card or something. But I was lucky enough to have the means to be able to actually take that step. And
No.
Yeah, you know,
let me highlight the means, Omar.
I didn't get hurt.
Because the means is not just… No, but look, the means is not just your credit card. If this was an opportunity that Carrie and I got, it would have been, okay, hold on a second. Go to the Indonesian consulate website. See what are the requirements to get
That's
a visa.
True.
Chances are, because we run a business, chances are would be 3 to 6 months bank statements yeah. of your personal bank account.
Yeah.
Three to six months bank statements from the company's bank account.
Yeah, yeah.
And then… passport copies, Emirates ID copies,
which,
Visa
which
copies.
Which gives you time to think about what you're doing. Which gives you
and
time to think
And then wait 14
about.
Days for an approval and a visa stamp so you can get on a plane and go to Jakarta.
100.
By then, he would have been like on prospect number 7.
The whole thing is sus. Like,
yeah, that's probably another reason why he ended up focusing his efforts on Americans. You know, because it was
because
just…
Because they traveled
it was perfect.
Easier.
It was, they could travel easily. They had that kind of… desire to take a big risk, you know?
Yeah.
Now, Akawi, I just wanted to let you know. Now, I have an opportunity for you. You just have to travel to Jakarta and meet my contact there. It's with a sporting goods
notes.
Company. They want you to become their regional head of marketing globally. Regional global head of marketing in Jakarta, based out of their head office. But you just need to pay for the ticket. They'll reimburse you. And then when you get there, the driver will meet you. Okay.
Did you hear what he said? Regional head of marketing globally.
Global regional head of marketing.
This
global
is why Omar is not
like
a con artist.
It's like the pitbull of titles. Anywho's it. I wanted to share this with you guys because honestly, I didn't know what to do with it.
Incredible story.
Like, wow. Omar, I feel so sorry for you. I want to give you $300.
Thank you. I'll take it.
Donation. We'll raise a fund. GoFundMe.
Yo, yeah. But I guess we got to get in contact with these people.
Yeah, let's drop them.
Yeah.
That's the next step.
Priority, yes.
Yeah. We'll drop them an email and see what happens.
Mashallah,
sure.
The podcast is amazing. It was really well worth the listen.
It was so really good. Well done. Really well done. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyways.
So good.
I'm glad you're
Omar,
safe,
I love
Omar.
You. Me too.
I love you too. I love
we
you
love
too.
You.
Love
you.
Thank you for kicking it with us today. I hope you enjoyed listening to this week's episode as much as we enjoyed creating it for you. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast at to stay up to date with all our conversations. Also, if you don't mind, hit us with the 5-star rating, leave a comment, let us know how you feel about the show. That way, it could also help others find the show. And be sure to share it with your friends and family, whoever you think can benefit from it. You can holler at us on all social media platforms at The Can Show. We'd love to hear from you. Or you could drop us an email to hello@thecanmedia.com. Salam.